From RunAsRadio.com, you're listening to Run As Radio, the internet audio talk show for IT professionals with Richard Campbell. This is Brandon Wen announcing show number 449, Learning from Data Breaches with guest Troy Hunt. Recorded Thursday, November 26th, 2015. Run As Radio is produced each week by PWOP Productions, providing professional media and podcasting services online at pwop.com. You can follow us on Twitter at twitter.com/runasradio.
Thank you, Brandon. This is Richard Campbell, and thanks for listening to Run As Radio, bringing back one of my favorites. Troy Hunt is the web security guy, MVP, serial plural site author, and the creator of Have I Been Pwned, where you can search for compromised accounts across a whole range of major data breaches, covering hundreds of millions of records. If it talks over HTTP or sends angle brackets, Troy is going to try and break it and then teach developers how to fix it again. And you've been doing a good job scaring people over on .NET Rocks, my friend. So I thought it was time to scare some IT folks.
That's my job, mate. That's what I'm here for.
On the Run As side, when we haven't talked to you for a year, you've had a crazy year. Ashley Madison, I think, was the most astonishing thing. Just all of the things that happened around, you know, life is short, have an affair. Life is short, have a data breach. But there's been other breaches since then that have been some big numbers too.
Look, there's been some really crazy stuff, and some I can talk about that I've published, and some I'm going to allude to, which are in the works at the moment, which are nuts as well. But, you know, things like, and obviously we're Run As Radio here, so we're a little bit more sort of server/hosting orientated. So Triple O web host about a month ago, 13 million accounts with plain text passwords, that is, and nobody wanted to return my calls when I'm trying to say, hey, guys, somebody's just given me 13 million of your accounts. Right. You might want to take a look at that.
Unbelievable. Yeah, and that was, I think, the thing that shocked me, that whole conversation, was just how indifferent they were. And until you had to put it live, like, when did they finally respond?
So they finally responded, and let's be clear, so that they responded partway through my attempts to privately get in touch with them, and the whole timeline's there on my blog for all to see.
Right.
And their response was basically from the help desk, saying, you know, look, try and use this mechanism of contacting us or that mechanism. And I'm trying to say, look, guys, maybe just sort of skip past the formality here and just get me someone who can freaking pay attention to the fact that you've just lost your entire client base.
Right.
So that they didn't eventually acknowledge it anywhere publicly until, I think it was like 8 days after I first tried to get in touch with them. And then the acknowledgement was, we've reset everybody's password. You know, the implicit acknowledgement leading up to that was, we're deleting the comments that the journalist left on our Facebook page when he tried to get in touch with us.
Right.
So, you know, and there's an interesting sort of side note to this, because Triple O web host was basically free hosting, and then they try and upsell you into other things.
Right.
And the number of times I have had people say to me, why is Azure so expensive? I can go over here and I can get it for free or for very little. And I sort of go, well, you may actually be going to getting what you're paying for.
Yeah.
And in cases like this, it's interesting. Afterwards, there was obviously quite an ardent supporter of them was sort of making the point, well, you can't expect them to be sort of responding to everybody. There's crazies out there. You know, they're very busy. There's only so many support staff. Well, yeah, that's why it's free.
Right. But, you know, that is the price of free. They're trying to run on a minimum infrastructure and a minimum amount of people, and this is the result.
Yeah, it is, and I don't want to sort of tar everyone with the same brush, but this is really consistent with the messages that we, you know, as technology professionals, we put forward when we're talking about how do we choose someone to look after our valuable things.
Yeah. Well, I think that's such an interesting part about it, is the web presence is a valuable thing, and it needs to be cared for properly. You know, free is worth what you paid.
Yeah, it certainly is in many cases, and unfortunately, that was the case with this one. But almost equally unfortunately, that they're no longer sort of an outlier, because we're seeing this sort of thing happen all the time. And in fact, there was a bit in the news, and I'll be able to release some more on it shortly, about some gambling sites that were compromised. Right. Now going back to 4 or 5 years ago. And these gambling sites are now owned by a publicly listed company in the UK. And someone handed over to myself and a journalist about 4 million records from one of them, 3 million records for another, very sort of sensitive, personally identifiable information. And it's all just floating around out there, and it's being traded by people as well. Right. And there's this really interesting sort of underbelly of the web where these guys, and then often by guys, I mean kids, are trading this data, sometimes attempting to sell this data for, you know, obviously for monetary gain if they're selling it, or to build up their collection if they're trading it.
Right.
And what's really interesting is you can find this stuff for sale, and often on the clear web as well. And in a case like Triple O Web Host, they were selling this data for $1,500 or $2,000, depending on who you talk to.
Wow.
And afterward, actually, there was a website, had it listed, $1,500 for Triple O Web Host. And after I published the blog post and it got some media time, and unfortunately that wiped quite a lot of value off the accounts. It went down to $200 because now everybody who has an account there is aware that their data was compromised and that the password that they reuse on their Facebook and their Gmail probably should be changed.
Right.
So the actual value of it to an attacker who wants to exploit the victim goes down.
But now you get into this, and I think you just blogged about this as well, the whole extortion approach where you go at these people saying, I have this information, I'll release it. I mean, I think Ashley Madison data was hugely valuable for that, but gambling data is lots of information here where it's like, I think the extortion move seems like the modern move now is just go back to the victim and hit them harder.
Well, the extortion is just massively opportunistic.
Yes.
So I wrote the blog post about extortion after Patreon users started getting extortion attempts. Now, Patreon is nothing more than a site where someone signs up who wants funding for a project they're working on. So for example, someone I was supporting does a podcast called the Risky Business Podcast, great security podcast. And I signed up to Patreon to give him $5 each month because I really liked the service.
Sure.
And then Patreon got compromised, including my details. That's the third time I've appeared in Have I Been Pwned now.
I'm in Have I Been Pwned 3 times as well, including Patreon, yes.
Oh, congratulations.
I feel good about it, really.
So, you know, in a case like this, there was really nothing of any sensitive data, yet suddenly millions of people get this email which says, we've got your address details and your social security number, and we're going to publish it unless you give us Bitcoin.
Right.
And in this case, Patreon had actually encrypted that data. And it's a bit unusual to see things like physical addresses encrypted. And not only had they encrypted it, but it seems like the private key wasn't leaked. So kudos to them for that.
Nice.
Yet still we get an attacker trying to extort them.
Right. Yep. Well, because, you know, people are afraid. And clearly ransomware is paying, right? The encryption ransomware trick is so popular these days. Somebody must be paying these people.
Yeah. And the thing about it is you got to think about the effort involved versus the reward versus the risk.
Yes.
So for something like extortion, so what are you doing? Let's say it's Ashley Madison, because that's a much better example of extortion, because that is actually something pretty sensitive.
Yes.
So you've got 31 million odd accounts. All you've got to do is be able to send 31 million odd emails. You can do a nice mail merge and actually put some personal details in there to just really scare the crap out of them as well.
We really have this data.
You have it. You send it off to all these people. You give them a Bitcoin address and you say, pay me or I'm going to disclose who you are. Doesn't really matter if they don't pay, because 99.something% of people won't pay.
Right.
But you only need to get a really small portion of 31 million.
Yes.
And you make some money. And they don't have to follow through on the threat, right?
Not at all. 0.1% is still 30,000 accounts.
Well, that's it. And if you're sort of secreted somewhere in the Eastern Bloc or outside the reach of Western-based law enforcement, your chances of actually getting caught for it are really low as well. I mean, I'll tell you what, it beats actually breaking into a liquor shop with a baseball bat or something like that. You know, you might actually get shot or something like that.
Yeah, no kidding. This is amazing. And it's just really, we're in an interesting place. But I think it begs this question now of not just having a plan on how to secure your data in the first place, but what are the right things to do when you've had a breach? Because we're seeing a lot of the wrong things to do.
Yeah, it's to me, a lot of it comes down to receptiveness and communication.
Right.
So when we think about Triple O Web Host, they took more than a week before they acknowledged it, and only then because it went public and they got a lot of pressure. When I think about those gambling cases, and I'll write about this in more detail later on, but I spoke to the parent company that now owns these two that were compromised before they owned them. And they got back in touch with me very quickly. I spoke to someone senior very quickly. I spoke to a bunch of security people. They were very receptive, very thankful. I mean, mind you, it wasn't me who hacked them. Someone passed the data on, so maybe they'd be a little bit less receptive to the actual perpetrator.
You're, in this case, you're not the hacker, and you're not press either. You're the I've been pwned guy. I'm going to add your data to this thing so people know your data has been leaked, you know. That you're in an interesting place, Troy.
Well, it's just interesting the way it's evolving in all sorts of directions I never expected. So, you know, one of the things that's happening, and I'll write about this one probably tonight or tomorrow. So I won't say the name of them yet, just in case something changes. But I had a journalist approach me a few days ago, someone I'd given comments to before, and they said, look, I've just been handed a really big data breach. You know, you're the Have I Been Pwned guy. Can you help me actually verify it? And this particular data breach relates to systems that are built and put in toys, and it has millions of adults and hundreds of thousands of children.
Wow!
Including their ages, which average out at 5 years old, their names, their gender, and by association to the parents, where they live, and I suspect access to their photos as well, which is something I'm yet to sort of work through. But it's interesting, the journalist approached me for help with verification. It was a little bit harder to verify this one, but what I've started doing lately is I've got nearly 300,000 subscribers to Have I Been Pwned now, verified subscribers. So people that have said, I want to know when I'm impacted in a data breach, and then they've received an email and clicked the unique link and sort of acknowledged that they did genuinely want to know.
Right.
So what I've started doing is when I get a data breach that I want to verify, I can reach out to people in my database and say, look, I've just been passed something. Can you help me establish whether it's legitimate or not? So in this case, I pinged about 18 people that had recently signed up, and I said, look, there's been a breach. If you're willing to help me verify, I'm going to send you a snippet of your information, and then you can sort of come back and confirm whether it's legit or not.
Right.
And sure enough, we got a 100% hit rate. Everyone came back and said, yes, this is my data. I signed up to that
service.
So
this is not about going off and surfing the dark net to find where the breach came from. This is about verifying the data you have in your hands is accurate, and these people have an account in this service.
Yeah, and look, it actually works out really well because then you've also got someone that can give you comments about the context of where they created the account.
Interesting.
And in this case, that there's also, you know, genuine human beings at the other end, often just normal everyday consumers.
Sure.
That are often willing to speak to the media as well and give them a story about how this happened and what the impact on them is. So it's actually proven to be enormously useful, as a means of verification as well.
Yeah, so it gives you, again, you're in a very unique position to be able to manage that information and be able to deal with that and maybe build up a cadre of folks that you trust to check information like that.
Yeah, well, of course, the reality of it is you always get sort of one small snapshot of people that are in both in a new breach and in my list of subscribers. So I've just tended to sort of go and grab the most recent ones whilst it's sort of fresh in their memory that they've signed up to Have I Been Pwned. But look, I mean, they've always been very receptive. Actually, one poor lady who's just realized that she's in this breach, I sort of give them data that I'm happy to give over email that's not too sensitive. So things like I'll say, okay, you know, you were born in October. Is this correct? Your internet service provider is such and such. And one lady came back and said, yeah, that's all correct. You know, obviously I've been breached, and wouldn't you know it, I've now changed from that internet service provider and I'm with TalkTalk. And they got hacked a few weeks ago as well. And you just sort of go, oh man, like, we're just
from
so
the
screwed.
Frying pan into the fire.
Oh, exactly.
The hacking at the root level of that, of the ISPs and your service providers and things like this, it's one thing for it to be Target. You know, and a very, you know, odd breach, the way that all of that, you know, Target seems so long ago and so reasonable compared to these are supposed to be the experts. These are the guys, you know, who should be more skilled, and they're falling for the same breaches and the same problems.
It's just amazing how low-hanging the risks are. So TalkTalk, the news came out about TalkTalk, and for anyone who's not familiar with TalkTalk, they're a big ISP in the UK. And they had a major incident. It would have been about start of November, I think, where, you know, the data was accessed illegally, so on and so forth, all the usual thing. And then the news started to come out about the arrests, and they arrested a 15-year-old, and then they arrested a 16-year-old.
Right.
And I had people sending me info privately that alleged that they were in the know and provided enough info that I think they're probably right, that are basically saying, look, all it was a SQL injection flaw on a video player. You know, like we've known about this for how long, a SQL injection. It is just right. Ridiculous how often that happens.
Yes.
This breach I'm dealing with at the moment, the one with all the kids, same thing, SQL injection. And when you use their website and you log on and it returns a response to you after logging on that has a SQL statement in it, including references to the internal database objects, you just start to go, what are you guys thinking? Like, this is just
so
negligent.
So these are not 15 and 16 year old prodigies. These are script kiddies using websites that we know exist and probably should list off at some point today to find people who have still not dealt with their basic SQL injection vulnerabilities.
And the interesting thing is, too, that, I mean, let's think about this sort of attacker profile, right? It's 15, 16 years old, so they're still at home. They're in sort of the perceived safety of their own home, so they're probably feeling a little bit like they can get away with whatever they want.
Sure.
Haven't yet really realized the consequences of what's going on out there. Maybe smart, but not sort of security smart, but are curious enough to go and find information. And then, as a friend of mine put it to me just this week, actually, he said, often these people are useful idiots. So this concept where they, it sounds derogatory, but I guess the paradigm being that they may not necessarily be that personally invested in whatever cause it is that would lead someone to hack it. But if they can be coerced into doing it and they can be the coalface of this attack and someone's given them just enough information and a little push in the right direction that they then want to sort of follow through and break into these sites. That is very useful, and it does compromise these sites,
for
and
sure.
Whoever sort of sent them there has this layer of abstraction away from them.
Right. It's pretty obvious how that goes on. Give me one sec to pay the bills here, because Run As Radio is brought to you by ScriptRock, the fighters of configuration drift. Configuration drift happens in every environment from 5 nodes to 5,000. ScriptRock will find and scan the configs of every node in your environment, no matter the platforms, and alert you to changes happening across machines. And now, with the latest update, ScriptRock offers vulnerability scanning on all your nodes at no extra cost. Give it a try for 3 months free with the coupon code RUNASRADIO, all one word, at scriptrock.com/RUNASRADIO. Let's talk a little about those tools for checking for vulnerabilities, just to know, you know, this is something I think every IT person responsible for an outward-facing service of any kind should be running to know what the bad guys are running to check your site.
Yeah, look, there are a heap of different things you can do at different stages of the life cycle. And if I was going to sort of be holistic for people, I'd say that the thing is, it's like this old sort of paradigm of where is it expensive to fix bugs in software? Well, it's really right. expensive down the tail end when you're running the tools after the whole thing's done. So, you know, what I'd really like to see, and I have a bit of a vested interest given I do a lot of Pluralsight courses and training, is the people building the systems, the developers, the IT pros, getting stuff right early, actually getting educated and trained up. And there's really an accountability to try and get it right back there. And it's a great ROI too, as opposed to where now at the end of the project, we're going to run one of these tools. And guess what? You've got like 100 different things you got to fix.
Right.
But that is very useful. And the reality of it is we have a lot of brownfield stuff out there, which has been built however many years ago, even maybe just months ago.
Sure.
Which may have vulnerabilities in it. And there are some really good tools that you can use for these sort of apps. And, you know, one of the classes that is most common is a dynamic analysis sort of tool where you're saying, go and try and break into this website and here's the URL. And it's a live running website and effectively you could be anywhere. And so long as you've got a web connection, you can run these tools. So I'm thinking about things like Akinetics is one, NetSparker is another one, which I particularly like because it gives really easily consumable feedback. And you just plug in the URL, and if necessary, you set up credentials if you need to authenticate to the site. and it goes away and it just hammers it for as long as it needs to. It could be hours. Your weblogs go absolutely nuts. And then it comes back and says, well, we managed to find cross-site scripting here and SQL injection there, and you're exposing headers you shouldn't and all sorts of other things. So they're very good. They're commercial. If you want to go free, you can go to things like OWASP Zap. So OWASP being the Open Web Application Security Project.
Yep.
And they have this Z Attack Proxy, which is Zap. So that's a free one. It doesn't have the polish of the other ones, but you can get in there right away and actually run that. So that's really neat. And then the other thing to think about as well is how are you going to do this on a continuous basis? Because what will happen is you'll scan the site, you'll find some stuff and you'll fix it, and then the developers will break it. Right. Or a system administrator will change a config, or something deviates, or not even that, but a new vulnerability comes up, right? Mm-hmm. So we find a risk in a framework or a particular version, and you're not necessarily going to go out and proactively scan it again. So there are other services like White Hat Sentinel, which can scan this on a continuous basis. And in fact, they have humans, which will make sure you don't have any false positives as well, which is always nice for saving a bit of time.
For a fee, of course. They could,
yeah, absolutely. And look, all of these things cost money. Yeah. And those dynamic analysis tools, that there's thousands of dollars per year. But by the same token, you kind of look at the effort it takes for the humans to do it and the potential loss if it goes wrong, and suddenly they actually start to look quite cheap.
Oh, the cost of breach. Like, you look at the numbers with Sony and Target and, you know, going all the way back to Stratfor, those guys. Like, man, the cost of prevention is substantially cheaper. Not just building it right, but I kind of feel like monitoring is a prereq now. If it's going to be public facing, you need to have a monitoring service on it that's watching for a new, that is, you know, you want an expert looking for the new vulnerabilities and checking your sites for you on them. You'd think the big cloud providers would be supplying these kinds of services now.
Well, they're getting better. There's more stuff sort of in the box now that makes life easier. So a really good example is about a week before recording this, actually, Microsoft released to public preview their threat detection tool within the Azure SQL database service. So what you can do now is if you've got auditing turned on your Azure database, and this is the platform as a service database, you can check a little box which says, hey, send me an email when someone's trying to SQL inject my site. And then you plug in your email address and you get this mail which says, you know, hey, this is what they're trying to do. Now, of course, that may also be after the fact. They could well have been successful in doing what they were doing.
They might have been successful. They weren't just trying. They did it.
But you see, they've been successful and now you know about it, as opposed to all the times they're successful and you don't know.
Well, and there's the whole Microsoft Advanced Threat Analytics, which is all about detecting the presence of hackers. You know, they lead with this idea that attackers are in your network for months before an attack per se actually takes place that you can detect.
Yeah, well, it's interesting as well when you think about the opportunity that cloud providers have to create this sort of service. So sure. Another really good one is Cloudflare. Now, Cloudflare, in case anyone here hasn't heard of Cloudflare, you do use them. Everybody uses them.
Sure.
And they are about the same size or even larger than Facebook, depending on how you look at their data. 5 trillion requests a month they're putting through. As of a few months ago when I did a course on it. But these guys can wrap around your service and they cover such a large portion of the internet that they can build up a really good picture of what an attack looks like. Not just the attacks they know already, but the new stuff that comes along.
Wow.
And it may not be against your things. It may be against someone else's things. But once they understand the pattern, they can protect their entire infrastructure against it. Now, it's never going to be foolproof,
no.
But they have an ability to provide a very transparent service that you could never do just with your own infrastructure.
Yeah, sure. And to being a Cloudflare customer in that scenario means somebody else's attack ends up protecting you, because their response to that is a response to protect all of their customers.
Yeah, exactly. And it makes the whole ecosystem better. And I really like that idea where security can be more transparent.
Yes.
Because this is part of the problem. It is often hard. And it pains me to say that because I don't think protecting against SQL injection is hard per se. But when let's say you're an IT manager or a CISO and you've got all of these assets out there already that have been created over however many years that you may not have sort of had the normal kind of levels of rigor against that you'd really like to have, being able to then go, look, there is some low-hanging fruit that we can pick that will help us protect our things in the immediate term, hopefully without then saying, okay, well, we don't actually need to fix underlying problems. But if they can move us forward in the right direction, then that's a good thing. And it does sort of go to this concept of security being defense in depth and a layer upon layer sort of approach.
Sure. Well, I mean, let us go pick the low-hanging fruit before the 15-year-olds do and sell it on the dark web, right? I mean, that's really what we're talking about. Ted, leave a SQL injection open. Like, I'll include a link to SQL Map, but there you go, right? There's a free tool to help you exploit a SQL injection attack.
Yeah, but you see, now you're encouraging hackers because you can use that to exploit anybody's risks. And this is part of the paradox as well, right? I mean, all of these tools, that the easier and more efficient the tool gets at finding risks in your things,
right,
the easier they are in finding risks in other things.
Yes.
SQL Map is a fantastic tool, but the number of data dumps that I have seen that have been generated by SQL Map is just enormous.
Mm-hmm. Because, I mean, it's there. It's on GitHub. It's free. It's open source. People are contributing to it, for crying out loud. And it is a tool for exploiting SQL injection.
Yeah. And I think one of the things that people may not realize as well is just how easy it is to exploit a SQL injection risk with automated tools.
Yep.
So in a lot of my talks, I use a tool called Havage. It's H-A-V-I-J. And that's actually since disappeared from the web. The guys who made it have dropped off somewhere. But it's a GUI-based tool where you copy and paste a URL. And this is a URL which might be at risk of SQL injection. So normally something with a query string like ID equals. And you say, go and get me all of the tables in this database. And it gives you the list. And then you say, now go and get me all of the columns. Now go and get me all of the data. In a lot of my talks, I get someone from the audience up who's never done anything malicious in their lives when it comes to this sort of attack. And within 5 minutes, they're sucking data out of my sample system, you know, designed like so many other real world systems are out there. And it's just a copy, paste, and a few clicks.
Wow. So, and look, anybody who says, like, don't put it up, protect, you know, don't let the hackers have it. It's like, they've already got it. You know, there's no security in obscurity. You know, we're far better off shining a light on all this and saying, it's this simple. Go, you know, you don't need to be an expert hacker to run a tool like Havage or SQL Map. This is why 15-year-olds are able to do it. I mean, you happen to know that for a fact, Troy. Is this the tools these kids are using that they end up with these data sets?
Yeah. And in fact, it's interesting when you go on YouTube and you search for these tools, take note of how many people are doing tutorials who have voices that haven't broken. There's the hint. There's
there
the hint.
You go.
You go, oh, that's really cute. Oh, crap. They just brought down a multi-billion-dollar company.
Right.
You know, that's about the level. But one of the other interesting things that kids in particular seem to do very well is social engineering.
Right.
You know, mind you, when you think about it, I've got a 3-year-old and a 6-year-old, and they're pretty good social engineers sometimes as well when they want something. Now, add another decade and a bit onto those ages, and suddenly they're very good at calling up companies and impersonating other people and providing just enough information to create enough confidence to then get more information out of that organization. And we've seen so many attacks online that begin with social engineering.
Right. Yeah, getting that initial lead in data. Well, our friend Paula Janowski tells the story of coming into an office that she's going to pen test and asking the reception for access to the internet while she's to get ready for the meeting because she's nervous. And being a small blonde girl doesn't hurt in this. And of course, as soon as she has access to their network in any way, she tears through the network. And by the time the meeting starts, she's already stripped all of their administrator passwords. Which, you know, rule number one is don't let Paula on your network.
If you know who Paula is. But, I mean, she is a great social engineer in that, look, I mean, if she walked in and she had a beard, it'd be different, right?
Right.
Like, if she fit the stereotype.
Yeah. You're foolish enough to not take her seriously because she's female. You know, you deserve what you get.
There's that. The other thing that you can do, if ever you want to be effectively invisible as someone turning up on a premise and poking around on things, is, mm-hmm. is you wear a high-vis vest. Once you've got a high-vis vest on, that's it. You are official. You can get into anything.
Put on a uniform. Have a, something with a with your name tag on it, right? And boom, you can walk through anything.
And we, look, we joke about it, but this is sort of the, it's funny. We have this, sort of human precondition to want to trust people and to think people are out there to do good. And it is so easy to fool the humans.
Yeah. So this is where the automation tools and sort of expecting, I think the last show I did with Paula, she said, look, you're always going to get penetrated. There's always a way to get penetrated. It's what happens next that matters. This is, you've already said it. It's security and depth. What do you do next? How do you know you've been penetrated? And how do you react after an event to do right by your customers and your company?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think you sort of touched on a bit earlier as well, which was this sort of point about having a plan. Like, what are you going to do when this happens? And, you know, here's one really good question to ask yourself if you listen to this and you do actually have a web asset. How quickly could you email all of your customers if you had to?
Right.
I mean, you might have a million, 10 million customers or something like that. You know, could you literally get them an email within 24 hours? Or would it be very difficult even to create an email that goes to everyone, let alone actually send it out via a provider? Mm-hmm. You know, would you have that ability to react quickly? Because while you're sitting there trying to figure it out, the internet's going nuts, throwing you know, sort of proverbial stones at you and getting very, very upset about your things, damaging your reputation. And at least in the cases of things like Patreon, which I mentioned before, they communicated really, really well and really, really early. So they got owned. They obviously screwed something up. In fact, they had debugging tools in a publicly facing environment, which gave attackers access to their things. So they made a bad mistake, but they owned it and they got up there quickly and they did their damage control.
And I think that's the big, I think this is the decision and the discussion that IT folks have to have with the business owners about, you know, the answer is not don't ever let that happen. The answer is, we actually have a plan should something happen. You cannot, hope's not a strategy here.
Yeah, and this is almost the layers thing again too, right? So the Patreon again. So they had credentials stored strongly. I think it was like bcrypt with a work factor of 12. Now, that is only of any use once someone gets your data. Mm-hmm. They had encrypted values even for things like your physical address. Again, that is only actually going to give them a tangible benefit once someone gets the data. But they planned for that in the event that something else went wrong that gave people access to that, which is, of course, exactly what happened.
Right.
Now, when I look at things like this data breach that's got all the kids in it that I'm dealing with at the moment, it is parents' passwords that are MD5 hash. No salt, just MD5. You want to know what the plain text password is? Google it. Google the hash. and most of the time, you will get the plain text value.
Too funny.
Yeah, the kids' birth dates and their parents' addresses.
Yeah.
Plain text. We're probably getting to the point now where you've actually got to encrypt that stuff and look after the key.
Yeah. Really interesting. I mean, it's interesting to think in the terms of Patreon may have been breached, but you respect what they did to deal with breaches, not only in their actions, but in their precognitive efforts that they did all of these things. And now you can see them and go, oh, okay. And you know, that's pretty good. You know, you still made a mistake, but this mistake wasn't total. You know, you're not stripped naked and lying on the ground here.
Well, look, I mean, that is a massive part of it. And here's one other thing to think about as well. And this one has really grown in my gears lately. Think about what data you actually need to have from the customer. Mm. If you're running a forum, do you really need to know that they're a male and they were born on the 7th of January, you know, 1986? Do you need to have that data? Because most of the time you don't.
No.
And I put this out there recently on Twitter. I said, look, what is the value proposition? And a bunch of people said, well, for things like copper, we need to know if you're 13 or older. Or for some sites, we need to know if you're 18 or older. And I said, well, look, there's a really easy way to do that rather than asking for their birth date. You say, are you 18 or older?
Yeah.
You know? Check the box. Yeah. Why do you actually need to know their birth date, which is now a piece of data that is frequently used as part of an identity verification process?
Right. Yeah, you don't need more than that. That's as much as you need. So,
can't lose what you don't have.
I think it's also a huge case for this is why we use transaction processors, because I simply do not want to own the data around a transaction. You know, other than this person paid me, that's as much as I want to store. Let a professional do that.
Yeah, and you know, same again with OpenID. If you can have someone else not only hold the credentials, but do the login brute force throttling and do the password resets and do everything else that goes with it, it has its own challenges, as using payment providers can do as well. But there are a whole bunch of things that are no longer your problem. It's not to say they won't get owned. It's just that you're not the guy who has to secure it. And they're probably going to do a better job than you if they're one of these really large-scale providers that have got to secure things across thousands of customers.
Well, and it's not a skill you have any value being good at, right?
You just don't need to. Why would you do that? I mean, exactly. It's this sort of continuous commoditization of sort of resources and services, which you can just palm off to someone else. You do pay a little bit of money for it, but oh man, you save yourself a lot of grief.
And part of calculating that ROI is the cost of maturing that skill yourself and maintaining that skill yourself.
Yeah, absolutely.
I like that a lot. Troy, we got to leave it there because I think we've, as usual, talked long and about some very important stuff. I really appreciate your time.
Yeah, absolutely my pleasure, mate. Anytime.
Yeah, you bet. And this was another Run As Radio. We'll talk to you next week.